You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chitakis.
This is a cold space in here, man. Real cold space. You know, I'm pretty sure.
A cold space because it's a jail cell in South Central. Along one wall, there's a hard concrete bench. Across from it, there's a payphone and a toilet covered in filth. No one's locked up in here now. This used to be a courthouse for juveniles, kids.
These cells really cause trauma. Like, we're standing in a very traumatic place. And my energy level is so crazy. Like, I'm starting to feel, like, the energy, like, you know what I'm saying, a little bit. Like, I'm starting to feel a little depressed standing in here, you know what I'm saying, looking at these cells. Like, it's not a good look, you know what I'm saying.
23-year-old Rondell Bourne is an organizer with the Youth Justice Coalition, which now runs this building. They're a group of young activists who are reimagining the future of juvenile justice in L.A. County. And it's not jail cells. Now, Bourne and others are hoping to replace a lock-em-up system with a kind of personal support that can turn a young person's life around. Now they have powerful allies on the L.A. County Board of Supervisors, and the county's whole juvenile justice system seems poised to transform. Here's KCRW's Robin Estrin.
There hasn't been a kid locked up in that particular jail cell since 2013, when the Youth Justice Coalition helped shut down this old courthouse and turned it into a community space called Chuco's Justice Center. Here's Emilio Sapien, the group's media coordinator.
This was, you know, a courtroom where young people would get sentenced to some of the highest sentences in the history of youth incarceration and the history of Los Angeles County. And you can see now we've turned this into a classroom where students can grow and organize and work towards getting their high school diploma.
The transformation of this space from a juvenile courthouse to a community center and alternative high school is a microcosm of a larger transformation in LA County, away from punishment and toward youth development.
I always hated for kids to be shackled when they came into the courtroom.
That's LA Superior Court Judge Donna Quigley Grohman. She presided over this very juvenile court that's now Chuco's Justice Center from 2007 until it closed in 2013.
So unless there was some extreme circumstance, I always had handcuffs removed. I mean, sometimes we had, before the law changed, we had 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds coming into court. It was really awful.
She's one of many officials who have worked in the system and now want it to change. Research published by LA County shows that one arrest doubles the chances a young person will drop out of school. Appearing in court before a judge like Grohman quadruples it.
Kids make mistakes and they need an opportunity to correct those mistakes so that they could grow into productive adults, as opposed to putting them into custody where they start thinking of themselves as criminals.
In 2020, the LA County Board of Supervisors committed to phasing the youth justice system away from the probation department and into a new agency by 2025. That agency launched in July.
So my name is Vincent Holmes, and I'm the interim director of the county's new Department of Youth Development.
Holmes says the Department of Youth Development has two main objectives. First, to divert young people who've gotten into trouble away from the criminal justice system and connected with services.
We want to take a look at that young person, his or her family dynamics, their education, and create a plan that really addresses sort of any challenges that that young person may be having, that that young person's family may be having, and instead proceed that way.
And second, to invest in community centers and organizations that keep kids from getting into trouble in the first place.
Organizations that are really just there to help young people as they sort of navigate life.
Organizations like the Youth Justice Coalition. It sounds like real reform, and it may be, but the county funded the new department at about $25 million, a fraction of the $150 million activists had called for. Holmes says that's been enough to hire about half the people he eventually wants to staff the department. But 27-year-old Youth Justice Coalition organizer Gloria Gonzalez, who consulted officials leading up to the department's launch, says $25 million isn't enough to truly invest
in people's well-being, healing, transformation through something that is not carceral, but through a lens of youth development.
Meanwhile, the juvenile justice system as it currently exists is floundering. In June, a state board found LA's Central Juvenile Hall unsuitable for the confinement of youth for the second time in a year. The board cited 16 months of serious health and safety violations. Officers were falsifying records about welfare checks and prescription drugs. In a statement to KCRW, the board said issues at the facility have since been resolved. But to Gonzalez, it's a wake-up call. She says that while the shuttered jail cells at Chuco's are a vestige of the county's past, similar jail cells are part of the present for hundreds of kids around LA County.
What you saw in those cells is not something foreign, is not something that is not currently happening to young people. Young people are being put in those same spaces right now as we speak, and are in those spaces as we speak. It isn't a solved issue, and there is a lot more that the board can do to support young people through the Department of Youth Development.
Young people like Jazara Halliday, who first stepped into Chuco's in 2019. She was 16, pregnant, and facing two felony charges.
And my mom was not aware of this, so I was literally like fighting through everything I was going through by myself. And I just had no guidance, right?
Halliday was given a long list of rules to follow. She had a 6 p.m. curfew. Her house was searched. She felt like she was always one mistake away from being thrown behind bars.
When they give you those papers, they're not giving you no resources with them. They're just telling you what to do. They expect you to come back with it done or you're done, basically.
At Chuco's, Halliday found support. She took an anger management class, did community service. She enrolled at Free LA High School, the alternative school there, where she learned about the school-to-prison pipeline, in addition to math and science. Now, she's employed by the school. She teaches a gardening class.
These are wildflowers. These are sunflowers. These are tomatoes. These are... Without Chuco's, it just would have been like... I feel like I would have been like a lost cause kind of situation.
Youth Justice Coalition organizers and their county partners are celebrating the new Department of Youth Development. But Gonzalez says it will take more work to realize advocates' ultimate goal.
We don't want police. We don't want a lockup. We don't want detention centers. Like, this is what our young people need. We need services. We need youth jobs. We need community centers. We need peace builders, right? We need schools.
With more investment in LA's young people, Gonzalez hopes more jail cells will become empty relics of the county's past. For KCRW, I'm Robin Estrin.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
More now of Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It sure hasn't felt like summer is finished in LA. After the heat of a searing SoCal day, it's always nice to relax for a cooler night of joy and pride at the bowl. Been called Africa's premier diva, but one continent cannot contain Angelique Kidjo. She is worldwide with her Grammy-winning music. She's a favorite of KCRW, having performed live here several times. She also just released an album commissioned by the LA Philharmonic with composer Philip Glass called Symphony No. 12. She's playing at the Hollywood Bowl tomorrow night. And Angelique Kidjo, welcome to you.
Hey, I'm happy to hear your voice, and I'm happy to be back at KCRW.
Yeah, I am happy to hear your voice, too. And you have played the ball so many times. You're like a fixture over there. And I know you've played a lot of remarkable venues over the years. What feels special to you about this one?
I never get enough of the ball, I swear to you. It's a setting that if I can put in my pocket and play everywhere around the world with it, I would gladly do so. The ball, I mean, the welcoming, the crew, we always think that when we get on stage, it just happens automatically. There are many people that are working for the moment we arrive on stage for you to see the concert. So every time I come to Hollywood Bowl, I'm looking for that experience because it's really good to be welcomed, to be appreciated for your craft, but also to be respected for your craft and the public. I'm telling you, you're outside enjoying the weather. You can eat, you can drink. You can bring your loved one. You can be your bring your children. It is, I mean, how better can it get?
And you're on a stage, by the way, where the Beatles have played, or where Stevie Wonder, or Diana Ross, or Dolly Parton. I mean, so many performers have been on that stage.
And then when you walk on that stage, you have all that in mind. And your feet have to be light. If you get weighted down by all the scope of the people that have come there, you never can be able to perform. And buddy and siphon the energy. Think about them being there, bringing the public to their feet, getting people to dance and sing, and then you can do magic.
Yeah, well, you're doing some magic with this new album with composer Philip Glass. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, I understand it's based on David Bowie's lyrics.
Oh, well, that was a complicated one. I like to challenge myself, but sometimes I'm like, Angelique, are you crazy? What in the world bring you to do this? But when Philip called me and said, well, I've been commissioned to do my 12th symphony and I've chosen you as the soloist, I'm like, really? You think I can do it? He said, yes. I said, okay, if you think I can do it, so let's go for it.
So talk a little bit about that process and putting it together and what you expect folks to hear in that composition.
Well, what I expect people to listen to in that composition is the poetry of David Bowie. I mean, we listen to the song sometimes, we are surrounded by the music and we're dancing and we pick one word here, another word there. I mean, till that symphony of Philip Glass, I've never really understand the scope of his poetry. And Symphony No. 12, is the lyrics are based on Lodger from his trilogy of album. And I was really amazed to hear his take on violence against women. It's something that is relevant throughout time for men to cover those kind of subjects. For me, as an advocate for women empowerment, it speaks very loud to my heart.
Let's move back an album before, and you made Mother Nature, where you collaborated with Burna Boy. That's a Nigerian musician who's known for his dancehall and pop music than he is for any kind of symphony, right? Very different. Let's hear a little bit of that track. How do you make that jump from performing with Philip Glass and the LA Phil to Burna Boy or back and forth? I mean, when so many musicians later in their careers are playing, you know, they're playing the greatest hits, or it seems like, you know, you're out there still creating, not doing greatest hits. You're like innovating.
Because music is a gift to all of us. It's the only language that we all speak across this planet. And every time I'm on stage, I'm humbled, I feel small, and thankful and grateful that I have a talent to be able to sing to many different people from every walk of life. And for me, music it doesn't have genre. We put the genre in there because we want to understand this versus this. Singing with Burna Boy, with Yemi Alade, Mr. Easy, all those young artists from Africa, it is what it is for me. Dancing is a part of our lives. It saved us. It saved us from staying still. It saved us from thinking too seriously about ourselves. It makes us sweat. It's good for our health. But music is also the thing that we always come back to. For me, art is the third pillar of power. There's no society without arts. And music is at the center of it. So as an artist, I don't see, and I think of myself counting my age, is how can I do something relevant? How can I bring people to the same, on the same album, on the same stage, for us to speak to the diversity of people that we are? So for me, playing with Burna Boy and playing with Philip Glass, there's no difference, because it's the same notes we're using with different language and different way to express our emotion and our humanity.
The last time you played the bowl was right after your album Celia came out. It was kind of an exploration of the African influence on the music of Cuba's much-celebrated Celia Cruz. I want to play a little bit of that. One of the songs called Kimbara. You famously performed this song, Angelique, with Celia Cruz after meeting her early in your career. What did it mean to record your take on it now? I mean, my gosh.
You know, when you are a young girl singing growing up in Africa, and when you are told constantly that you have nothing to do on stage, that the only thing that is already set up for you is to be a wife and a mother and take care of a home. And you have somebody that's like Celia Cruz walk on stage playing with a form of music that I've always thought it was going to be only the male, the men that can only play that form of music. She walked on that stage and go Asuka, and I stood up. I said, amen, thank you. Now I can grab the baton from you and then go around the world and tell them, you know what, my gender don't matter. I was seeing you to sleep, all of y'all. So touching Kimbara was something that was absolutely important for me to do. Because when she started singing that song, then and even in Paris, I would look at her when she's doing it. I'm like, this is absolutely out of this world. She's not only a singer, but she's a percussionist with her voice. Not many people can do that. When you start singing Kimbara, man, you gotta be really ready to pace your breathing and keep the note at the same time. And when I was listening to that song from the first time I heard it, I've heard 6/8 in it on the 4/4. And I'm like, I cannot dance that song, that salsa, without having that in my feet. So I can do it with my feet, but can I do it musically? Yeah. And I said to myself, well, if you don't try, you don't know. If you don't fall, you can't rise. So go for it. So I did.
Again, we talk about in this interview about the so many, you know, different ways that you perform and the different kinds of music and the different, you know, continents that you've gone to perform. And I want to talk a little bit about your style as well that has changed and evolved a little bit. Your first album cover is just you on a white background in a zebra print cat suit, which is amazing. Over the years, there are leather jackets and elaborate dresses and always high heels on stage, which is also very impressive. I can't even imagine. You're talking about, you know, dancing and the steps, doing it in high heels. As a guy, I can't even imagine. What are you trying to get across through those amazing outfits and the perform? I mean, because performing is also seeing, right?
Yeah, that's what my mother say, and that's what Miriam Makeba taught me. Nobody want to see you on the jeans on the stage. Jeans is for every day, everybody wear that. So you are there to bring people, to entertain people, but to make people dream also. And for me, it started with the first album you talked about, because when we were preparing that photo session, the stylist was like, well, Don't you guys walk naked in Africa? Why do you need stylism? And I walk out and bought that zebra suit. And from that day on, I'm like, I'm never going to let anyone define what I'm going to look like and who I wanted to be.
So someone actually said that to you?
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
But it's okay. All those things, they help me grow. They help me understand what is important. What I mean, you can't answer to every microaggression because I don't have time for that. And I don't want to take responsibility on people's ignorance. I just move on because I know what I want to do. And at the same time when I was doing that album, there were journalists telling me it's too modern. I mean, it's not traditional enough. And it has been written in a newspaper that journalists have written in the newspaper that she doubted about my Africanity. And all those things just make me persevere because I'm like, well, Africa is modern. There's no traditional music anywhere on the planet that is not modern. Because if it's not modern, it dies. I mean, we are not artists. We are not piece of art that have to stay still in the museum. We are human beings that evolve in our time. So my music has always been to tell that story. And to tell also the bridges that we can build to break all those preconscious ideas that really don't allow us to collaborate in a better sense of the way to teach the world and to teach the politician that we, as citizens, we are willing to work together. We have something to say, and music is the weapon of peace for us, of a discussion without any concept of color, any concept of language. We can prove and teach the leaders to work differently together.
I know your show tomorrow night will not disappoint. I can't wait to have you back at the radio station, too. Angélique Kidjo, thank you so much for talking with us today. She's playing the Hollywood Bowl tomorrow night. You can find out more information on our website, kcrw.com/GreaterLA. And listen to her past KCRW performances, too, by searching for her at kcrw.com. Angélique, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Can't wait to be there.
Moving on now with KCRW's Greater LA, I'm Steve Chiotakis. The narrative over the past few years has been the demographics are changing in Orange County. Deep, deep red OC is now a solid purple, skewing perhaps blue. There are younger and more diverse voters than in years past. And if Democrats are to continue making inroads in purple OC and even save any chance of their House majority, they will need to appeal to one major group of voters, Asian Americans. And one race, in particular, is a flashpoint. Gustavo Arellano is a columnist for the LA Times and our regular, of course, here on GLA. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
In 2018, a blue wave in OC sent 7 Democrats to Congress, all of them in Orange County. In 2020, 2 of those seats flipped back to red. How are Asian Americans factoring into what's happening there?
Well, what happened in 2020 was history. You had 2 of the first 3 ever Korean-American women elected to Congress in Michelle Steele and Young Kim, and they're both Republicans. In a way, it was a coming out party for Asian-American Republicans in Orange County, which historically had always been elected to local seats. Also, at one point, had 3 of the 5 seats on the Board of Supervisors, but you never had one of their own in Congress. So the Republican Party, at a time where they're singing in Orange County, they see Asian Americans as their last bulwark until the Democrats truly take over.
But the demographic is not a monolith, as you know. Westminster has the largest concentration of Vietnamese people outside of Vietnam. There are also large populations of Chinese and Korean immigrants in Irvine and other parts of OC. Some vote Democrat, others vote Republican. I mean, how can candidates appeal to such a diverse group?
Exactly. When you have a supposed group that involves, 30-some nationalities and all sorts of ethnicities or and all that, it's really hard. But what's happened, it's not so much the candidates, it's been the party. The Democrats are just, you know, Johnny come latelys to this. The Republican Party is specifically with the Vietnamese American vote over the past 30 years, they've created this farm system of candidates who get that name recognition and then are able to go further on. So Michelle Steele is the best example. She was on the Board of Equalization for a while. She was, you know, before she ran for Congress, she was on the Board of Supervisors. So when she ran for Congress, she was able to pull the upset victory. And as the incumbent, even though her district leans Democrat, it also has Little Saigon, which historically has been a very reliable Republican vote.
So let's talk about Michelle Steele's race. She's the incumbent. Her Democratic challenger, Jay Chen, is in the race. What are these candidates doing to appeal to Asian American voters?
They're going out there. They're knocking on doors. They're trying to connect with those communities. Michelle Steele, again, she has that base in Little Saigon. You know, she's Korean American. Jay Chen, he's Taiwanese American. So he's also trying to get into that vote. You know, we're just talking about Asian American voters, which represent a quarter of the voting population in Orange County. But they're still a minority. You still have the big Latino vote and the big white vote. So at the same time that you're trying to get the Asian vote, they have to get these other votes as well.
The campaign's gotten pretty heated, right? I mean, what kinds of things are these candidates saying about one another?
Yeah, the mud is being flung because it's a very close race. And when you're that close, you're not just going to rely on the issues. You're going to take any little edge to show that the other person is a fool. So Jay Chen has accused his opponents of, you know, commie baiting him. And he, of course, is offended because he's of Taiwanese descent. And Taiwan, of course, has been fending off mainland China, communist China, for a long time. Steele, on the other hand, she has accused Jay Chen of mocking her accent because there was a campaign event in April where Chen said that he, quote, that people needed an interpreter to figure out exactly what Michelle Steele was saying. And Michelle Steele is a Korean immigrant. And so she took great offense to that. And Chen was saying, like, no, I'm just saying that, you know, she doesn't make her policies don't make sense. But you don't, that's a rookie mistake. You don't say something that can even be somewhat misconstrued as you mocking someone for their immigrant status.
This is unlike any other election year. Like, conventional wisdom is kind of thrown out the window because you've got Roe versus Wade getting overturned. You know, a lot of things are sort of bubbling right now at the surface. Is that all playing into the campaign as well?
Yeah, that's a big question, because Asian American voters have also been, according to polls, shown as voters are most in favor of abortion rights. Michelle Steele has been very vocal in the past about her opposition to abortion rights. Of course, now she has totally shut up about it because it's a close race. So it'll be interesting to see if the Republicans are able to keep both Michelle Steele and Young Kim's seats, then you can see nationwide the Republican Party really doubling down. But if the Democrats, if you have Jay Chen being able to beat Michelle Steele, wow, that's going to be a huge opportunity for them. And that both of those parties will use whatever victory or losses they get going into 2024.
On the national sense, of course, that's an important thing for both parties if they're trying to, you know, get the Asian American vote. Gustavo Arellano, columnist for the LA Times. Always a pleasure, Gustavo. Thanks.
Gracias.
That's all the time we have for this evening. Tomorrow, we're going to talk tomatoes, but without the dirt, only water, like much less water, much, much less water. Hydroponically grown tomatoes. And why aren't more tomatoes grown that way here in California? That's tomorrow on GLA. Check out our website anytime, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Share your thoughts. Maybe you have a story idea. Subscribe to the podcast anytime at kcrw.com/GLA, or get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthews, Sonia Geis, Jay Siebold, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, and Holly Adams all had hands and ears on this evening's episode. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ears. Have a great night.